Bienvenidos, welcome. I'm Mirna Perez, and I'm director of the Brennan Center's Voting Rights and Elections Project. I want to thank our friends and our supporters for joining this call. And I want to start off by saying something that I think most of us know, and that is that our American democracy faces extraordinary strains. The last midterm election saw the lowest voter turnout in 72 years. Pervasive gerrymandering put dozens of congressional seats out of the reach of competitive elections. Dark money floods into state judicial races. The Supreme Court gutted a half century of voting rights protections. And all of this happened before Donald Trump became president. Since then, it has only gotten harder for American voices to be heard in the democratic system. But notwithstanding the very real areas of concern, there is a source of optimism in the area of election reform, and that is with automatic voter registration. For those of you who don't know what automatic voter registration is, it's a fancy term the Brennan Center made up about a decade ago for two very modest but transformative tweaks to our traditional registration system. The first is that voter registration information would be sent over from government agencies to election officials electronically, as opposed to a pen and paper system. The second is that voters who are eligible will be registered unless they decline, as opposed to having to take an affirmative step to get registered. Sometimes the political scientists call this an opt-out method rather than an opt-in method. The purpose of this call is not to make a case for AVR, because we've done this in a number of different settings. But I will say briefly that automatic voter registration system, when done correctly, improves election integrity, is cheaper, and it gets more people on the rolls. The purpose of this call is to give you some quick background on the victories that we've seen in AVR, some of the lessons learned in our campaigns, and our expectations for continued momentum. When automatic voter registration first hit the national scene in 2015, only California and Oregon had adopted automatic voter registration. And now I'm very proud to say we are up to 12 states and the District of Columbia. How does the Brennan Center do our automatic voter registration work? Well, in states, we try to find the most effective change maker, whether that be a legislator, a secretary of state, a governor, or nonprofit groups, and we provide them full services. We draft legislation, we provide talking points, we supply research, we do legal analysis, we provide legal thinking, strategic thinking, lobbying, we assist with implementation. All this goes to say that we try to act as a back office to electeds and secretary of states and nonprofits who don't have the kinds of resources to dig into the weeds and get all of the details right. To this end, we have assembled a great Brennan Center team full of lawyers and researchers and economists and a former Secretary of State of West Virginia, Natalie Tennant, who heads up our work nationwide trying to pass and implement automatic voter registration.
Mirna, thank you so much. This is so inspiring just hearing you, and I know the work that we're doing, and there's no doubt that the momentum for this bipartisan policy is growing. It has been an amazing last 4 weeks of success, and the work is continuing for AVR. And it's been approved in various ways across those 13 entities that Mirna talked about, from legislation being passed to ballot initiatives where the voter has approved it to administrative implementation. And as Mirna said, the Brennan Center for Justice is the original architect for automatic voter registration long before I was at the center, long before I was Secretary of State. And so because of that, you know, I worked to bring this unique perspective of the work that we do now, because when I was Secretary of State in West Virginia, I used the resources and reports from the Brennan Center. And so we use that same understanding and experience on how we work with states now in advocating for AVR. You know, I know how important it is to get good information as an elected official. And then, so now we try to bring that same understanding and that same help to elected officials, to coalitions, to help advocate for AVR. And so on to Washington State. As with any reform efforts, there were a number of actors making a difference. And the Brennan Center has been working with strong groups on the ground like Washington Voting Justice Coalition, the Win-Win Coalition, and working with lawmakers in Washington since 2016 to pass automatic voter registration. Whether it was serving on a legislative panel or helping to craft legislation or researching the perimeters of a bill. And on March the 19th, I had the honor of being there in person when Governor Inslee signed the AVR bill into law, making it the 10th state and D.C. to approve AVR. And in addition to automatic voter registration at the Department of Licensing in Washington when people apply for an enhanced driver's license, the bill will also require public agencies to move toward automatic voter registration under the discretion of the governor with the consultation of the Secretary of State. And to that end, I would like to introduce you to my friend and colleague, Kim Wyman, who is the 15th Secretary of State of Washington. And I always like to say that we sat beside each other in our national secretaries' business meetings. It was alphabetical order. And now we stand together for automatic voter registration. And Secretary Wyman, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Natalie. And I really want to thank the Brennan Center and everyone who's been working on this important legislation. And Myrna, thank you again for having me on this call. I wanted to just give you kind of a background of what we went through in Washington to get this legislation passed and give you a little bit of the context of how things worked in our state, and then once the legislation's passed, how we're going to move forward. So this really started officially, I think, in earnest in late 2014 for the 2015 legislative session, when then Senator Jayapal and now Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal approached me to do this in a bipartisan manner. And her thinking, of course, was this would be a great opportunity for us to really expand registration for more potential voters. And I saw it as a real opportunity for a Democratic and Republican win-win. I'm a Republican in a very blue state, and people in my caucuses in the House and Senate had been really hammering me for the 2 years I had been elected to require some sort of citizenship check, you know, and they were really wanting, you know, everything from people to completely re-register to, you know, having some sort of requirement day forward. And I would explain to them that that really wasn't possible. So I thought this was an opportunity to appease some of that demand on the right. And then on the Democratic side, we had a great deal of interest by many people to just expand and make voting registration easier for people getting a social service or getting a driver's license. What we discovered as we started to work on the legislation pretty early on was our state does not require proof of citizenship because we're not real ID compliant yet. And we have what's called in our state an enhanced driver's license. So we really focused on that because we thought that would be an easy place to start, is anyone who had gotten an enhanced driver's license would be automatically registered. And we worked the legislation. Another thing that rose up and to get on your radar of a lesson learned was that Pramila Jayapal is an immigration attorney, and her concern was you could have a situation where someone providing maybe a social service that required ID and citizenship check to get, say, our food stamps, that they could be maybe not checking citizenship in the total way and inadvertently register someone who is a non-citizen. And, you know, we were more worried about how that would jeopardize their future citizenship status or become a problem down the road. So we wanted to really protect potential voters that way. So we moved forward, and the legislation did not get out of the Senate, which was controlled by the Republicans at the time. And I received a great deal of pushback from both caucuses in the House and the Senate, Republican members who just didn't see any value in it. So we spent the next year working and trying to get some bipartisan sponsorship of it, and then Senator Jayapal ran for Congress. So this got put on hold in 2016, but in 2017, the governor, going into that session, Governor Inslee met with me, and he and I wanted to make it priority legislation. So it was really important because the governor had to, encourage some of his department agencies that provide social services to perform this service. And that, I think, has probably been the biggest hurdle that we've found, is that not all agencies are really embracing the idea of making automatic voter registration a reality. The Department of Licensing, we have worked very closely with, and I think that's probably one of the lessons learned, is to try to have as many stakeholders engaged as possible and bring them along before you pass the legislation so the implementation will be smoother. We got into the legislative session. The bill did pass, and as Secretary Tenet mentioned, it was signed into law earlier this year. So I think those are all the points I wanted to cover for the moment, and I'd be glad to take questions.
Thank you, Secretary. We'll take some questions after the next presentation. But I also just wanted to let folks know that the real vision that you had, I mean, obviously displaying that and telling us right now, but I think it was interesting how you began pulling people together for an implementation working group even before the bill was passed this year, and again, being inclusive and pulling all the stakeholders together. So we'll get to some questions in a bit. So thank you again, Secretary, for your work and for joining us today. Myrna.
Thank you.
Sure, and we'll move on to New Jersey. On Tuesday, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy signed automatic voter registration into law. New Jersey's AVR bill takes into account the diverse needs of New Jersey's population. It provides for public education about automatic voter registration. It provides for the shielding from public disclosure of personal information of domestic violence survivors. It provides protections for persons who may be inadvertently registered, and it allows for the expansion of AVR to other state agencies when they have the data collection and technological readiness to do so. There were two prior attempts at getting AVR passed, both vetoed by then-Governor Christie, but none of those reforms were as comprehensive or as robust as the one that we saw pass on Tuesday. The Brennan Center had the privilege of working with an array and sophisticated and talented professionals over the years for doing this and getting this accomplishment over the finish line, but chief among them were the New Jersey League of Women Voters, the lobbying firm of Kaufman Vita, and the New Jersey Institute of Social Justice. I am thrilled to report that we have the Institute's Scott Novakowski on the line for some lessons learned.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, Myrna and Natalie and the Brennan Center, both for the opportunity to join today's call, as well as for all the work you've done over the years to protect and expand democracy here in New Jersey and really across the country. I think one of the primary lessons we learned was the need to keep control over the narrative, and that sometimes the most damage can actually come from allies who are well-meaning but nonetheless create some difficulties. One of the challenges in pushing for AVR is that not everyone has a driver's license or a state ID. In an ideal world, AVR would be implemented in all government agencies. But unfortunately, those other agencies aren't often as technologically advanced as the motor vehicle departments, and that's certainly the case here in New Jersey. And so our bill had a provision, like Myrna mentioned, that would allow the Secretary of State to expand AVR into additional agencies in the future as it becomes feasible. Unfortunately, you know, some of our allies publicized that the bill would establish AVR at welfare agencies and at the parole board. There are few words more likely to create controversy and draw the ire of both conservatives and liberals than welfare and parolees. And so, needless to say, you know, the press and opponents picked up on this pretty quickly, and soon there was a great deal of news coverage and headlines about welfare offices and parole offices. We were able to correct the narrative a bit through issuing additional press statements and talking points. The Brennan Center was incredibly helpful there in getting this information quickly into the hands of advocates and lawmakers. And so all of this is just to highlight the need for advocates to be disciplined and unified in their messaging. You know, I certainly understand the urge to be very loud about having an inclusive and robust AVR program. It's certainly an important point. But knowing, you know, knowing that the additional agencies are still years away from being able to implement, pushing that point really didn't translate into any political capital. In fact, caused a good amount of backlash and undoubtedly some lost votes without really any clear benefit. I think an additional lesson that we learned is the need for flexibility both in drafting and in strategy. As Myrna mentioned, this victory was the result of years of hard work by the Brennan Center, as well as our colleagues at the League of Women Voters and many others. AVR had passed twice before, only to be vetoed. The first time it was part of a massive omnibus piece of legislation that was called the Democracy Act. And so as we started rethinking this, you know, the question soon came up of whether AVR should be a standalone bill or should it be part of a larger piece of legislation. We knew Governor Murphy, now Governor Murphy, then candidate Murphy, was likely to be elected, that he was a former NAACP board member, and that he campaigned as a champion of voting rights. You know, all the advocates wanted to take best advantage of this moment. You know, there was understandably temptation to push another massive omnibus bill that would include ABR and would really position New Jersey as a champion of democracy. At the same time, all of those different reforms require different levels of work, both by the advocates as well as the state, and not to mention, you know, a pretty hefty price tag. And we didn't want any of these sort of ancillary issues to end up being a poison pill that would doom or slow down the AVR bill. And in addition, you know, we quickly realized that even though, you know, a lot of the legislators in both houses who had voted for the Democracy Act were still in office, the reality was actually pretty much more complicated. You know, when that bill was being debated and was passed, everyone kind of knew the governor was going to veto it, and that it wasn't going to become law. Voting for it was pretty easy, right? You're a champion of democracy. You get to highlight that, and you don't actually have to worry about implementation or the price tag or, you know, the political implications of new and different voters coming into the process. With the prospect of an omnibus bill that would almost certainly be signed by this governor, the calculus was very different. Legislators were much less enthusiastic about a huge bill, and even pairing AVR with any of the other reforms just became much more complicated. And so we ended up pushing a standalone AVR bill, which required a considerable amount of flexibility, both in the drafting and how we talked about it and how we pushed it. One of the things I really appreciate most about working with Myrna and her team at the Brennan Center was their ability to think through these kinds of issues and to amend, redraft, restructure the legislation seamlessly and at a moment's notice. I think that was a big piece of why we're able to get this through so quickly. So with that, I'm going to kick it back to Myrna for some additional takeaways.
Sure. Thanks so much, Scott. I would just add two final points. One is that one can never work the election administrators enough. We had spent years and years and years trying to educate election administrators at all levels about AVR to try and earn their support and get their buy-in and address their concerns. And as it happens, there's a bunch of different layers of election administrators. Some of them have formal positions of authority and professional associations. Some of them just have the cell phone number of the lobbyist. Some of them are new to their position. Some of them are appointed. Some of them are elected. Some of them had their jobs forever, and they are very likely to not speak in one voice. And so even when you believe that you have addressed the concerns and appropriately collaborated with a certain number of them, there's always more that you can work with, because you never know who's going to be the one that calls the lobbyist and says that they want a particular position to be taken. The second big lesson, I think, is one can never believe that your state is immune to specious and baseless and desperate claims of voter fraud. You know, people were really scraping at the bottom of the barrel, and that's saying a lot given the very thin reed that our national politicians are, you know, are grasping at when they start making claims of voter fraud. But we heard things that were so ridiculous it was hard to respond professionally, because they seemed so desperate and so craven and so false. And to just be ready that they're coming, be ready for your responses, be ready for how you're going to you immunize your program as much as you can, and educate the media in advance that they're coming, that way they are the ones that know how to poke apart some of the arguments that are being made and to ask the hard questions. And for that, I think we are in a good position to go back to Natalie, who can tell us about what we're expecting next.
Yes. As good as the last 4 weeks have been, we have even bright spots in the future, too. And I guess I'm one who always thinks, you know, you're only as good as your next victory, as your next work. And so while we get to celebrate and learn from our past victories, it's time to look also forward at the same time. And so we do have a few more states with possible victories this year, and as we have found, like a lot of legislative efforts across the country, it takes a couple years to get legislation passed for all the reasons mentioned by the Secretary Scott and Myrna. And one area where we are hopeful in the near future is Massachusetts. It's a two-year legislative session. There are strong groups on the ground, and we and our allies there had an AVR conference back in November of 2016, where we brought together state executives, lawmakers, advocates, as well as experts in policy, electoral reform, and administration. And so together with these state partners, we've laid that groundwork of education where there's an understanding of this bipartisan process. So that's Massachusetts. And then this November is a ballot initiative in Nevada, where the citizens of that state will have the opportunity to vote for implementing automatic voter registration there. And so after these, whether they're legislative, administrative, or ballot victories, comes the work of implementation. And so the Brennan Center continues to work with states to develop the forms and the process so citizens have a simple and clear user experience that is also compliant with federal and state laws as this policy is implemented. So I want to thank everyone for the time that they have given us to learn about AVR and hear what we're doing. We now will begin the question and answer session, and I'll turn it over to our phone operator to facilitate the questions, and that is Adrian.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There'll be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have an audio question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And we're standing by for audio questions. And currently, we have no audio questions.
Before the audience leaves, mm-hmm. Scott, do you mind telling the group what some of our intentions are for New Jersey and how we intend to build upon this great win?
Sure. Yeah, we're the momentum is on our side, and the governor and many of the key legislators have made very clear Tuesday's bill signing that this is just the beginning of legislative reforms, voting reforms in New Jersey. So we're hopeful. One of the key things that we're pushing is a campaign to restore voting rights to people with criminal convictions in New Jersey. Legislation was introduced last month, and the campaign has been endorsed so far by close to 100 different organizations, as well as some mayors across the state. And then in addition to that, there's an early voting bill that's moving online voter registration. And I think there's been conversations about moving same-day registration as well as a bill to end prison-based gerrymandering here in New Jersey.
Great. Thank you. Well, if there are no further questions, I want to thank everybody.
We did have somebody queue up, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Sir, Brooke, your line is open. Brooke Russell.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just had a question about how the registration then leads to turnout for the actual elections. Is that part of the strategy, or is that a different group of actors that kind of see that through to the final step?
Right. Well, there are a lot of groups. This is Mirna from the Brennan Center. There, certainly one of the big hopes is that automatic voter registration will increase turnout. The science and data behind that is pretty compelling. As an empirical matter, there were research and studies indicating that it improved turnout in Oregon. But also social scientists and folks who specialize on GOTV are always telling us that once a person gets on the voter registration rolls, they can be much more easily converted to becoming a voter than if you have to register to them to begin with. Why is that? They get election mailings. They get called by campaigns. They get their doors knocked on. And so it saves a bunch of resources for GOTV efforts. When the groups traditionally doing registration in GOTV can just focus on GOTV, and they have a closed set of people that are now on already on the voter registration rolls. And then again, the government is also helping this by giving them touches, by sending them sample ballots, by sending them election notices, by reminding them where their polling location is. So there needs to be more, there will continue to be more data on this as AVR gets online in more states, but we're very, very encouraged both from the discussion of adjacent reforms and because of what we've seen in Oregon.
Thank you.
And we have no further questions.
Okay, so I want to thank everybody and let folks know that please be watching your email. We're going to have another segment in the series to talk about some of the other two states in Maryland and California, and we will schedule that in the upcoming days and weeks. Thank you so much for your time, and if anybody ever has any questions about automatic voter registration or the Brennan Center, please do feel to reach out. We are at your service.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.